You're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of To The Journey is brought to you by Audible.com. Offering more than 150,000 titles for your tablet, smartphone, and desktop. Support the show and get a free audiobook of your choice by visiting audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hi, this is Garrett Wong. I played Ensign Harry Kim on Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is To The Journey.
To the journey!
I am your co-host, Tristan Riddell, and with me, as always, is...
Charlene Schmidt!
And today, we are going to be doing a rewrite episode, but before we get into that, we have some celebration. Now, what is that, Char?
Well, I cannot believe this myself, but Voyager premiered 2 decades ago. Two! As of yesterday,
years.
Friday, January 16th, and I don't know about you, but I feel really freaking old.
I for some reason, whenever they have these passages of time, or whenever they say like, oh, Saved by the Bell is now, you know, like, you know, 25 years old or something like that, or like, mm-hmm. or, you know, stuff like that, or when they say like, oh, these kids don't know what a Game Boy is.
Right, yeah.
That's never affected me. I've never felt old. Like, I've been like, oh my gosh, that's so long ago, but I've never mm-hmm. felt like an ancient person myself. Maybe I need to hit 30 before that happens. I don't know.
You're not 30 yet? Jeez. Oh, you just wait then, buddy. You just wait.
I think I was 8. Yeah, I was 8 when Voyager aired for the first time.
Wow. I was 13, and I remember specifically that day. We were at a family get-together at my grandparents' house, but my dad and I very blatantly kind of ignored our family at this get-together because Voyager was premiering, and it was very important that we watched it as it aired, never mind the fact that I was taping it at the same time. We had to watch it, and so we did. Now, do you remember watching it for the first time? I'm talking Caretaker, of course.
Yeah, no, I do remember watching it for the first time because I was really pissed. Because I had to go to a church home group that night.
Oh, so you missed it?
I missed it, and so I had to record it. And, you know, like, the tape wasn't working for some reason. Because I had to leave the house right when it started to air. And,
oh, no.
And so I was so upset. Because, like, it started to air, and the tape wasn't recording. And I'm like, I'm missing it! And I'm just, like, like, as I'm staring at the TV, actually watching it, I'm screaming, I'm missing it.
Oh, that's so sad.
And so it's scrolling by, and my parents, because they love me, and they're Star Trek fans, they're, you know, they're trying to figure out what's going on. They're running back and forth, and, you know, we're late for the home groups. And we finally get it to work. And just like, as I'm in the back of the car, I'm just like, I don't have the opening recorded.
Oh,
and
no.
And then so like weeks go by and I'm like, is my memory playing tricks on me? Is this really what happened before the opening credits? A friend of my dad's had a full recording and gave it to me a few weeks later. And so that is my story of watching it.
Fantastic. So you finally got to see that opening scroll.
Yeah. So Caretaker, I mean, I've heard a lot of people talk, like, because we're around the 20th anniversary, we heard a lot of people talk about Caretaker and their reactions to it. And one person stated, and this isn't the first time that I've heard this, that this was the first non-pilot-y pilot of Star Trek where it didn't feel like a pilot. It felt like it was just a part of the show. Because if you look at Encounter at 4 Point, holy crap, you know, like, that is very much, it does not feel like TNG at all to me.
Oh, no, and I'm sorry, but it's not a very good episode whatsoever.
No, it's not, and then you have Deep Space Nine, where I thought that was a good episode, but it didn't really feel, like, it didn't set the tone of the show, in my opinion. I felt like it was very different from the rest, but then you have Caretaker, and I was just like, wow, that is the show, that is a Voyager episode. And then later on, even though this was before Broken Bow, you look at Broken Bow. Broken Bow is a solid episode, but mm-hmm. I still think Caretaker is better. And so even though, like, Voyager is hated on a lot, I think it has the best opening episode.
I have to agree. I think Caretaker started off with a lot of momentum, and we saw all the potential that Voyager had to be. Unfortunately, it didn't capitalize on that potential, whereas I would say DS9 and TNG, they started off about halfway there and then really found their footing later on and ended on a high note. And I agree, Broken Bow is also very solid. It's a very well-done pilot, but I do think Caretaker wins. I might be a little biased, and I don't care. It is good.
Absolutely. But we're not here to talk about Caretaker. We are here to talk about our episode rewrite of episode 210, Cold Fire. And for those of you who do not remember Cold Fire, it opens up with Kes, who is talking to Tuvok, and he is trying to help her build her mental capabilities. And so that kind of establishes the story right off the bat on that end. And the corpse, the remains of the Caretaker, starts shaking. And it's because they're near his mate. And while they're searching for that signal, they come across a smaller Caretaker-esque station. And they find 2,000 Onkampa there. And Kes is like, what the hell? What's going on? Why are all of you here? And he says, he's like, oh, Suspiria's been taking care of us. It's all cool. And says, that's when we find out that the name of the Caretaker's mate, the female Caretaker that was referenced in the first episode, is called Suspiria. So we find out that these Onkampas have really, you know, really powerful minds. They have telekinesis and pyrokinesis and, things like that.
I like that. Pyrokinesis. I've never actually heard that word before.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's totally the term. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Right? Isn't that such a cool word?
That is a great word. Yes.
And so they can live longer. Like the lead Onkampa is Tanis. He's 14 years old. And so he kind of tells Kes, hey, all this can be yours, but you have to join us. And he tries to teach her to use her mental capabilities, and he does, but she's not quite trained on it. And so she tries to show Tuvok, and Tuvok is hurt because she boils him, and his face starts to explode. And long story short, Tanis turns out to be a little bit evil because he's in league with Suspiria, and Suspiria thinks that Janeway and company killed the Caretaker and killed her mate, and so she wanted to enact her revenge. But thankfully, Tuvok teched the tech and made a techie poison and was able to disable Suspiria. And she got away before she could enact her revenge. And Kes realized what a jerk Tanis was and then went along their way.
And that's pretty much that. And then
Am I missing anything?
You're missing the very end where Kes can suddenly not boil things anymore, which is probably for the best.
Probably for the best. I think you're right. So now, what we're going to do, and I'm talking for a long time because summaries take a while, and we're trying to do better at that. We're trying to do better summaries when we do our episodes.
Yeah, and that was a very solid effort. Way to go.
Thank you very much. So in this rewrite, Char and I are going to go back and forth, maybe take a little turns here and there, and talk about how we would do the script differently. Now, we'll try to keep it grounded in a 1990s TV budget.
Yes.
And because, you know, you can't have, you know, like you can't have movie making stuff in a TV show. But we're going to talk about what we liked, what we didn't like, and what we would change differently. Sometimes it can be a massive rewrite. Sometimes it's just subtle changes here and there. So, Char, what did you like about this episode? What did you think worked well and that you might want to keep?
I think that what works very well in this episode, and it's a great idea, is the exploration of Kes's telepathic powers. I mean, that's intriguing. It's fun, and I like the fact that she's working with Tuvok, and so this whole idea of enhancing her abilities, working on them and making them better, is a fantastic idea, and I would absolutely keep that. How about you?
Absolutely. Like, in my rewrite, it is very much keeps the mental prowess, because I thought that was definitely a very interesting thing about Kes's character, and I'm glad that they kept it. And I'm glad that it was the focus of her return in Fury, even though, don't get me started on Fury.
yeah, let's not.
I think it could be handled a little differently from the beginning, but that was definitely a win for the episode.
Yeah, totally. So we both like that, and I guess we're both keeping that in our rewrite, but how about the Onkampans? The station out there, what do you think about this idea of that there are other Okampans out there and they are with the caretaker's mate who suddenly just decides to show up in season two? And as they show in the episode, it's only 10 months after Voyager gets stranded in the Delta Quadrant. That's not that much time, really, in the long run.
Well, I read some background on this episode, and I feel like in like because if I talk too much, I'm just going to end up giving out my entire storyline. There's an interesting note behind that, and I never knew this, and I'm a hardcore Voyager fan, obviously, and so are you, but I never knew this, that the female caretaker was in out. It was a writer's tool to get them out of the Delta Quadrant if the idea was not working.
Okay. That makes some sense.
I didn't know that. The reason why they mentioned a female caretaker in the first episode is so that if they did a season of television and everybody hated that they were in the Delta Quadrant, nobody liked it, it wasn't working, it was too different, they would go, okay, well, they meet up with the female caretaker at the end of season one or the end of whatever season, and then go, and they're home now, and we just have TNG part two.
This amazes me. I never knew this either. I had no idea that they were going to use her as an out. So, okay, that begs the question then, why did they end up using her in this episode? Because that's not what happened.
I think it was a sign that the network, and I think I'm just kind of suspecting here, I think it's a sign that the network's like, okay, the show's working. You have a good first season. You're well into your second season. And we don't need this anymore.
Okay.
And I think it was a way to address it so that people didn't forget about it, but they didn't need to enact it. And so it's essentially they didn't get rid of it because obviously they didn't get home in the second season and they didn't kill, you know, the female caretaker, and the female caretaker didn't kill them. So they addressed it because they're like, oh, hey, remember continuity back, you know, like at the beginning of season one and we're in the middle of season two. But if they wanted to use her later on, they could. So I think it was a way of the network saying, we trust the show, this is the format, and we're going to stick to it.
And I suppose, given that this were true, we're going to say it is, the writers probably think, well, people know in the back of their minds that this is always an option. Let's get rid of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, let's address this now, and then that way people don't think we're going to save it for the season or the series finale.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Because I always thought that, you know, season one, I figured, oh, the show is going to end because they're going to meet up with the female caretaker and she'll get them home.
Which is really convenient, you know?
Right. It's too convenient.
Yeah.
So in a way, I'm glad that didn't happen.
So instead of just going back and forth about what we liked and what we would keep because we could just keep going and going, I want to know what you wrote. I want to know your story. Tell me everything about you, Char.
Man, how much time have you got? I think I'll just stick with my rewrite.
Okay,
for now.
All right.
I already said keep the whole thing with telepathic powers. I would keep the station of Okampans, but I thought using Suspiria in this episode in this way, especially a one-off episode where it had no real consequences in the end, was a superior waste. And so I would actually chuck out Suspiria. I do not want to deal with her right now. I don't think she should be in this episode. And I think they should have saved her for later for a really good two-parter later on in the series. Like instead of maybe yet another Borg two-parter in season six, they could have found the caretaker's mate hanging out. And maybe she could be a really evil little girl. I don't know. I never really liked that part of it, actually. They could have done something so much better with her. And I would not include her in this episode at all. But I would keep the Okampans on this station, and you could even give them the backstory of, well, we were with Suspiria. She kind of guided us, and we, you know, she helped us develop our telekinetic abilities. And then when we were at a point where we didn't really need her anymore, she decided to go off and do her own thing. And we've been on our own since. So I would do that. And I would make Tanis the villain then, instead of Suspiria. And as Kes gets to know Tanis, the less she trusts him. Like, at first, she's really intrigued, right? Like, oh, there's this colony of Okampans, and they're out here. They live to be 14 years old. They have enhanced mental powers. This is really cool. I like it. But then she kind of knows that underneath the surface of this whole thing, something's a little shady about this dude. And so she starts to kind of wonder, what's really going on here? And I don't really know if this is a better story, but this is kind of just what I came up with, where he and the colony of Ocampans, they know of Voyager's reputation for killing the caretaker, and they do not like Voyager. They do not trust Voyager. They think that Voyager is a ship full of bad people. And he, Tanis, really doesn't like the fact that another Ocampan, Kes, is on this ship. And he really just doesn't see why in the world she sees anything in these people. And so maybe he tries to take control over her via these telekinetic enhancements. And maybe everything kind of gets going where he uses her to damage, do something harmful to Voyager, maybe even try to destroy Voyager, especially when she starts to not want to go to the colony willingly. He starts to take control then and says, okay, I'm going to use you. I'm going to make you come with me because you're not going to have any other option but to live on the station, because the ship's going to be gone. You're not going to be able to be there anymore. And so I would make it more of that sort of a thing where we have to figure out what's going on, and if Kes is herself or not, make that a little bit of a mystery. But then ultimately, Kes is still underneath, and she manages to maybe use her enhanced powers just enough to knock him down, sort of like what she did in the episode. But she will use some clever way to do it and buy herself just enough time for security, say, to grab Tanis and then avoid the ship from blowing up or whatever is going to happen. I didn't think that through terribly. I just thought, danger, danger, danger. And unfortunately, that's kind of Voyager almost every week, right? Where the ship is in danger. So I'm sorry about that. It's not very original, but the whole way he's going to play with Kes's mind, maybe you could really do something with that if you wanted to sort out the details. I didn't. So anyway, they kick Tanis back to the station, and Voyager's about to head on its way, and Tanis kind of lets them know, well, you know, you kind of proved to me that you guys are the bad ones, and I'm not going to stop spitting ill repute on your reputation, and, you know, someday it's going to come back to haunt you, which kind of maybe, if you really wanted to get into season two, could lead into more things about how Voyager does not have any friends out there. There's a lot of enemies, and they just, despite their best intentions, don't have allies out there. That's going to make Janeway's life pure hell. And you could even finish up the episode with that, with maybe a captain's log. Well, this one didn't work. He hates us, and he's going to make us sound like the bad guys, and we've got to move on. But the female caretaker's out there somewhere. And then, you know, even though this really didn't end very well, there's not a whole lot they can do about it. And off they go. To be continued? Is it gonna is there gonna be a consequence of this, right?
Yeah.
That would be nice. You could have even tied that into something where, I don't know, the Kazon feel more justified at wanting to take Voyager and destroy it or use the technology because they just, they're the bad guys, or something to that effect.
Yeah.
I don't know. What did you want to do with this episode?
Well, I mean, it was, I had a lot of the same themes as you, and I really like what you had to say. Mine was, I mean, it definitely focused on the mental powers, but not in the same fashion that you did. I wanted to do it where it starts out and she's just, she's with Tuvok, and Tuvok and her are working on mental powers. She starts hearing people all over the ship. She still hears Neelix, you know, talking about his whiskers and whatnot.
Not the ear hairs.
I know. I loved that moment. And
it's cute.
She starts to hear a voice that she doesn't recognize. She asks Tuvok if he's doing that. And he's like, no, I'm just trying to guide you to people on the ship. And it's Tanis who is reaching out to her. She's like, okay, well, maybe it was nothing. And then she goes back to her quarters and she starts to hear him again. And she gets more explicit instructions on where to go. And so they wind up at the array, and they kind of have that same thing where it's just like, oh my God, it's just like the caretaker's array. Maybe we're dealing with the caretaker, and there's 2,000 Ocampa on board. So it very much follows the same kind of structure, but there is no mention of Suspiria. Kind of like you, where there's just like, oh yeah, no, like we were here because of Suspiria, but she's not here anymore. Like I absolutely had that same thing. And
cool.
But the thing is, though, this story addresses the bad math in Elogium.
Okay.
These Ocampans are much more like refugees from the Ocampan homeworld. where they are, I'm trying to figure out the math on this. And so people who are listening, please forgive me, because this is all from a story standpoint, not from a mathematical standpoint. So I just want you to just take some license here. Them having only one child is a lie. And it's Ooh. Not, it wasn't the producer's fault. It wasn't the writer's fault for saying that, oh, they can only have one child. It was what the society told Kes from beginning, is that, oh yeah, you can only have one child.
Oh, interesting.
It was their way of trying to limit population control, because they never knew if they went beyond the resources that the caretaker provided for them, you know, would they be able to feed a booming population? So what they would do is they would like, if you had a second child, they'd ship it off.
To where?
Exactly.
Okay.
And they would ship it off away, and Suspiria took pity on these. On this generation of second borns when they were still having it go on, because like the lie wasn't maintained yet. They didn't infiltrate the hospitals. They didn't, like, there were still generations going on where they still had memory of saying, like, hey, I remember having a brother, you know, like, I remember having siblings. Mm. And so they had to weed that out. And until they could weed that out of memory, they would ship off the second born. Now this is that part of the story where I just need the listeners to go with it. Okay, like, I'm sure there's plenty of plot holes. Please don't email me. I'm sure there's plenty of plot holes in that thinking. Just go with the story.
Right.
And so they ship off the second born, and then Tanis tells the whole story, and they said, like, and also being a second born gives you better access to your mental powers than the firstborns on Ocampa.
Hmm.
And because of the chemistry. Kes is like, oh, well, does that mean I have, you know, no, because I'm a firstborn, does that mean I can't access it? And they're like, well, no, it just takes you longer. But since we already have our powers, you know, established, you know, we can help you out. It's easier for us to help you out. And so they go through this whole thing. They go through the whole rigmarole, and I can have a real family now that I'm separate from society. I can have more than one kid or blah, blah, blah. But the thing is Tanis is like, we'll teach you this whole thing, but you have to stay here, you know, you have to be with us. And the entire reason, like, the subplot where we find out, and which I don't want to go too terribly into much, is that will add a little danger to it, is how they get their work done is by mental slavery.
Ooh, that's good and evil.
Yeah, like, I thought that was evil enough. We're like, nobody's dying, but they're taking over their lives. And, like, so they want to take over the Voyager crew and have them go mine for them or go find them resources.
Right, using mind control to make them do the menial jobs.
Exactly, that's what it is. And so that's...
You evil jerks.
That's the evil plot that adds to it. And, like, the Voyager crew, you know, finds out that this is what they're doing by investigating. And while all this is going on, and Kes is trying to learn from Tanis. And so it culminates in the whole thing. You know, like, just Ooh. Like it does in the episode. Go for it.
Possible idea. They use non-telepaths specifically to do this work just because it's that much easier to control them. And therefore, humans, very susceptible. They are easy targets.
Yes. And, like, Tuvok is the one that has the resistance to it. And he's
right.
the one who saves Kes or saves whoever, or, like, saves the crew, because he,
yeah.
like, him and a band of Vulcans on the ship. You know, like, they...
Yeah, like, what, he and Vorik...
He and Vorik, and I think there's a few other. There are other Vulcans on the ship, but we've just never really seen them or heard about them, because the doc did say you're not compatible with any other Vulcans on the ship.
Oh, you know, that's true, right. And this is season 2.
Yeah.
So it'd be very easy to add a couple more names. Okay, a small army of Vulcans.
A small army of Vulcans saved the day, but Kes, you know, she rises to the occasion and blocks out Tanis and blasts him away. And... you know, as I'm talking this out, I realized that my thing at the end was I was going to make Tanis Suspiria. But the sheer fact that Kes can block Tanis out doesn't really make sense, because Suspiria is supposed to be, like, all powerful and...
Right. Yeah, that would totally just not make any sense.
So that way, I just basically, I'll end like you do, where Suspiria is just out there somewhere.
Right. Yeah. I kind of like that idea where it's... It seems like it's promising that maybe we'll find the caretaker's mate and she could possibly get him home. But let's not focus on that so much, because it's only season 2.
Yeah, exactly. It's only season 2. So, yeah, that was my main thing, is that, like, you know, as I'm talking about, we have the second born thing, and that's, like, pretty much that's their origin. you know, they're the banished secondborns. But, you know, you could take or leave that, you know, like, because you could have the same thing that you did in the episode where you're just like, oh yeah, we left out, a small band left, you know, and then boom, it's done, and then you don't have the, I guess I'm just trying to retcon for Elogium really bad.
Yeah, well, no, I really like that because A, continuity, but then B, that's a great commentary on, like, countries that you have a law against how many children you can have in a family. And that leads to a lot of things like abortion or throwing the kid in the river and things of that nature. Just or if nothing else, a really severe penalty for having more than, say, two kids or whatever the limit is.
Right.
And so you're making a small commentary on that as a thing. It's out there, acknowledging it and getting people thinking about it. So right. I like that, actually. I really like your idea a lot better than mine. It's much more refined. It's got a lot, I don't know, it's got a better story structure. It tells a better story. I felt like mine is just more of a, it's still a very average episode, which I consider Cold Fire to be. I'm just taking out the stuff that's really stupid.
Well, I mean, sometimes that's what you have to do. I mean, sometimes a lot of these episodes, and this goes for all of Star Trek, it should have gone through a few more rounds of editing of just taking out the unnecessary stuff.
Yeah, it's like they didn't really quite think this whole thing through, because Suspiria really should have been a really big, huge event if and when they did encounter her in Voyager's journey home. And then instead we got this.
And I very rarely say this. I very rarely say this about Star Trek because it's the non-action parts that are my favorite. But I feel like this episode could have used a little bit more action.
It had the potential to do that, certainly.
Yeah.
And yeah, they should have used more.
Like, we had some tension, but we didn't really get any action until the last 30 seconds.
Right. And I suppose maybe it is a little difficult when you're doing mind control techniques to make things action-oriented. And, I mean, we did get the whole Tuvok boiling blood out of his nose and that sort of thing. You know the other thing that I would cut out of this episode? No Kes screaming, please, never ever do that, ever. No, no, no. My eardrums.
I was also really pissed off because I'm like, wow, she worked really hard on that hydroponics bay, and now it's gone.
Yeah. Yeah, she burned it. It's sad. And like, okay, then what? The Voyager crew, they have replicator rations. They're depending on the hydroponics bay for some foodstuffs. I mean, how much Leola root did they have to freaking eat because there weren't any vegetables?
Like, can you imagine, like, someone walking in where, like, you know, like, Paris walks in and, like, to the hydroponics bay to pick up a carrot, and he just kind of goes, oh, you want to talk to me about what happened here, Kes?
She brought the fire and extinguished it out.
Bring the fire.
They're all dead, so you can't regrow them, right? There's probably maybe a few seeds here and there, but wow, dude, you're starting all over again.
Yeah, sometimes when you burn, it does make the soil more fertile, but you have to start over.
Well, and you got to do that in a kind of a cyclical fashion, you know, like with crop rotation. If you got to keep things going, but you do have to let things regenerate, and, well, this is not how you do that. You're doing it wrong.
Well,
all right.
So that was your idea. That was mine, and we talked a little bit about the 20th anniversary. And I think, you know, we're gonna keep going a little bit with the 20th anniversary. I think we're going to, you know, like, a 20th anniversary isn't just one day; it's an entire year of celebration.
Totally. Yeah, we're just kicking this off.
We're just kicking this off, and so you'll hear us go back and forth on the 20th anniversary as we continue on.
Yes, and I'm hoping Star Trek Las Vegas is gonna do some really awesome stuff. Because we haven't heard tons about what they're doing for Voyager's 20th anniversary yet, but it is still a long way till August, so I'm hoping we get some really big announcements coming soon. All right, well, Cold Fire isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on Trek FM this week, and so here's a little glimpse at what else is happening on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Because it's actually legitimately trying to say something.
Yes, very Star Trek. It may be the most Star Trek of all Star Trek.
Yeah, it's definitely what I would point to as being, this is what science fiction is about.
Earl Grey.
Kovac will tell us to experience Bij sometimes, in which case we will draw the Bij card, Klingon word for pain. So,
is it our birthday?
It is. It's going to be a lot of fun.
To the journey!
that's the one thing we could take from Homecoming is, like, paragraph one, Chakotay and Seven break up. That's for real.
Yeah, they shake hands and go, hey, it's been fun. It's been nice. Thanks for the picnic.
See ya.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
At this point, like, they could say, yeah, why not? Star Wars crossover. I would essentially say, fine. Both franchises are dead. Let's just sew them together and see what happens.
Melodic Treks.
One of the most well thought out alien races that you only see in one episode.
Yeah, and the music is it's menacing without being over menacing, if that makes sense.
Axanar, the official podcast.
I think Justin Lin is a fascinating choice to direct because the Fast and the Furious movies, even though, they're action, adventure, road race movies, are really about a family.
The 602 Club.
That's really cool, though. I mean, I think that is a fantastic way to get to see just about any movie is kind of being able to watch it through a kid's eyes.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of our shows. We are available wherever you can get your podcasts. And none of them would be possible without the help of a sponsor, so let's hear a little bit about that.
Our sponsor for the show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all the books you've always wanted to, but never thought you had the time for. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers, Audible has something for everyone. You'll be happy to hear that both Mosaic and Pathways are available from Audible. As a Trek.fm listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank you and Audible for supporting To the Journey and Trek.fm.
So aside from sponsors, we do have some support from listeners like you on Patreon. It's patreon.com/trekfm. There's various levels of contribution you can make as a subscriber, and there are perks in it for you. If you haven't checked that out, give it a look, because it's pretty awesome, and it helps us out tremendously. We'd like to thank our associate producer, Lisa Stevens. Follow her on Twitter at Flip18. Now, I think we've got something really cool coming up next week, because it's something we haven't done before. What is that?
That's right. It's something new for us, and what we're doing is we're doing an episode commentary of a two-parter, and that two-parter is The Killing Game.
Yes, we've not done a two-parter yet. Keyword yet.
Keyword yet, but you'll have to wait until next week to hear it. So until then, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!